Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. The Prajapati first begot Suyagna in the womb of his wife Akuti, and then Suyagna begot demigods, headed by Suyama, in the womb of his wife Dakshina. Suyagna, as the Indradev, diminished very great miseries in the three planetary systems, upper, lower, and intermediate. And because he so diminished the miseries of the universe, he was later called Hari by the great father of mankind, namely Svayambhuva Manu. Purport. In order to guard against the invention of unauthorized incarnations of God by the fanciful, less intelligent persons, the name of the father of the bona fide incarnation is also mentioned in the authorized revealed scriptures. No one, therefore, can be accepted as an incarnation of the Lord if his father's name, as well as the name of the village or place in which he appears, is not mentioned by the authorized scriptures. In the Bhagavad Puran, the name of Kalki incarnation, which is to take place in almost 400,000 years, is mentioned along with the name of his father and the name of the village in which he will appear. A sane man, therefore, does not accept any cheap edition of an incarnation without reference to the authorized scriptures. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakayam Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyade Shatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. First of all, I'd like to ask permission from all the senior Vaishnavas present in the temple room and online. Please give me your blessing so I can speak something of relevance, something which you can utilize in your practical day-to-day devotional life, and something which can bring a, let's say, deeper understanding of Krishna, his incarnations, devotees, and their relationships. Vanchakalpa turuprascha kripa sindhu bhya evacha Patitanam pavinebhyo Vaishnavyo namo namaha Anantakoti Vaishnavrindaki. Hare Krishna. So we can see how Brahma, in the last verse of the previous chapter, Purusha Shukta confirmed in verse 46, he stated to Narada that now is the time to start describing the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we heard yesterday in the text number 1, Brahma first of all described Varahadev and his respective pastimes. In today's verse, I've done a bit of research about the pastimes of Yajna, right? Who is this seventh incarnation? The only book which I found, which is a very wonderful book, it's called Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And this was composed by one of our acharyas, Rupa Goswami. It's a very wonderful book. There was one wonderful edition by Banu Swami. Banu Swami translated his Laghu Bhagavatamrita, and also he translated commentaries of Balada Vidya Bhushan. So it's a very wonderful book. I recommend for those who desire to do like a deeper study upon the different incarnations and how they're structured, different avatars there, when they appear, when they disappear, what's their pastime and so on. So that's Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami. So, a bit of technicalities, just to kind of introduce them, we're going to go into the Leela and presentation, who actually this incarnation named Yajna, who he was and what was his sort of the pastimes. So in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, 1.4.2, it is said, Lord Yagya and the other Manvantara avatars may appropriately be called also Kalpa avatars, because they appear during the Manu's reign, and they are called Manvantara avatars. So here it is mentioned a few names, right? These names are Svayambhuva Manu, Yagya, Dakshina, Akuti. So in introduction to the pastime, so Svayambhuva Manu, Manu is basically like a father of mankind, one of the main instructive progenitors, someone who holds the instructions of his father, who is basically Brahma. The instruction is to basically give an opportunity to the living souls to have a material facilitation within this material cosmos. And as that instruction, it's a very, very interesting sort of a step-by-step process. Because Brahma is a very powerful, empowered personality who kind of oversees this material creation, he has also very empowered personalities underneath him, who he gave their, so kind of, he gives them the shakti, the energy, the science, the wisdom to create progeny throughout the whole cosmos. So one of these progenitors is Svayambhuva Manu, who has all the holistic understanding of how to actually perform this activity. So this Svayambhuva Manu once had three daughters and two sons. These three daughters' names were Akuti, Devahuti, and Prashuti. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a very deep explanation on all this, how do you say, this genealogical tree of Svayambhuva Manu respectively, and other Manus as well. So Svayambhuva Manu gave the daughter Akuti to one very specific, very unique Brahmana. It is said, Prabhupada writes in his purport, he says, the word Brahma Varchashvi is very significant. Ruchi was a Brahmana. So Ruchi is a personality who will become a new Prajapati, right? The one who actually takes the instructions of Svayambhuva Manu, actually creates the progeny. So this great Brahmana, Prabhupada explains, Ruchi was a Brahmana, and he executed the Brahmanical duties very rigidly. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Brahmanical qualifications are control of the senses, control of the mind, cleanliness within and without, development of spiritual and material knowledge, simplicity, truthfulness, faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, etc. There are many qualities which indicate a Brahmanical personality, and it is understood that Ruchi followed all the Brahmanical principles rigidly. Therefore, he is specifically mentioned as Brahma Varchasvi. This is Srila Prabhupada in purport to verse in 4th canto, chapter 1, verse 3. So out of this marriage, out of this union between Akuti, the daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, and Brahmana Ruchi, who became the progenitor, the title is called Prajapati, they come two children. One of the name of the child was Yagna, and another child was a female, and her name was Dakshina. So there was a bit of a plan, there was a bit of a treaty, there was a bit of a thing going on between Ruchi, Brahmana Ruchi, and Svayambhuva Manu. Svayambhuva Manu, as I mentioned, had two sons, but because to be a Manu, you have a lot of intelligence. And also, it's mentioned in the commentaries by the Vaishnava Acharyas, namely Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur, he says that he had this gift of Trikala Gyan. So he understands the past, present, and future. So he knew that the daughter Akuti, she was very pure and very chaste woman. Therefore, he requested Brahmana Ruchi to give the son, the male, to him as a gift. Right? There's mentioned that there is something in the Vedic system, there's something called Patrika Dharma. So Patrika Dharma is, let's say, if a person is in union with a woman but he doesn't have a son, he may request someone else either to impregnate his wife or to give a son, someone's old son, as a dakshina, as a charity. So this Patrika Dharma was requested by Svayambhuva Manu unto this Brahmana or Prajapati Ruchi. So he requested, please give me this yajna, this son which will be born out of you, yajna, give it to me, and I will train him up. I will give him, quote unquote, all the qualifications necessary to become a great personality. This was just a sort of a disguise, because he understood that yajna is not an ordinary personality. It's an incarnation, bona fide incarnation, as presented here by Brahma. So, yajna became a great leader of the demigods and received position of Indra, due to no one being qualified amongst the jivas to occupy the position. This brought great jubilation to all the three planetary systems. So this is very interesting. Different acharyas, they're giving the commentaries that when the time comes in the universe, you see, as we all know, all these demigods, they are different individual souls occupying a specific position. And imagine there's a very hardcore CV to occupy a position like that, right? For you to become a Yama, for you to become Vayu, for you to become Brahma, Indra, it's very complicated, very difficult, and requires, let's say, a lot of and great qualifications to occupy such a position like this. Therefore, what is needed? A qualified personalities. So at that time, at that stage of consciousness of the universe, there was no jiva amongst all those billions and trillions and uncountable jivas in that specific, in this specific cosmos. There was not a single one qualified enough to occupy the position of Indradev. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead came and enacted his Leela as Indradev. So there are a few questions which I would like to ask you. Hope the mic can be ready. Prabhupada mentions in two sequences, and twice he says, Suyajna as Indradev diminished very great miseries. And then again he says, so diminish the miseries of the universe. So twice is mentioned diminishing the miseries. So I would like to ask you, what do you think are the three predominant, or what are the predominant miseries that the souls, individual souls, have in this material world? What are the miseries that we go through on a regular basis, on a repetitive basis? Can you speak out loud, please?
The threefold miseries of Adidevi, Adibodhi, Adidatmik.
The three kleshas, exactly. And now let's kind of go systematically through these three kleshas. There's something very interesting about these three kleshas. So, Adibhautika, right? What is that? What does Adibhautika represent? What kind of a misery? Coming from which source? Excuse me? Other living entities. Adibhautika, right? Adibhautika signifies that other living entities are putting miseries upon us. So basically, third-party misery upon myself, okay? Adhyatmika. Mind and body. Exactly, right? Prabhupada was many times saying that this body is not a suitable place for a gentleman, or this material universe is not a place for a gentleman. And sometimes we know that it's not very place to be, right? This material body many times gives a lot of difficulties, challenges, problems, diseases, and is humbling. It's a humbling residence, this material body. And what is the last one? Adidevika?
Nature.
What are the personalities behind every respectable energies of nature? The demigods. So these three are called the kleshas. And here it is said very nicely, he diminished great miseries. So these are the three respective miseries that are inflicted upon the living entity. So now I would like to draw interesting connection between the miseries which are inflicted and administration, right? Or in other words, management. We had a Jamashtami recently, and I had a few conversations with some managers in our temple. And I will tell you one thing, it's not an easy position to be in. It's really not an easy position to be in management. Why? Because of a lot of responsibility. People think in this day and age that you can just be in management and just harvest the positive things, right? You can just harvest the maybe you're going to be in the first in the queue, or you're going to have some extra prasadam, or I don't know. You have variety of kind of a positive things which come with the manager, right? You are the manager. You can do what needs to be done. But people don't really understand that those which are in politics or managers or leaders are actually harvesting great deal of karma for those which are subordinate or those which are underneath them. So let's draw a lesson or connection between three kleshas and actually good management. What was the position which we already mentioned that Yajna, the incarnation Yajna, took in this material universe? What was the post? Indradev. Who is Indra? Who is Indradev as in his position? Head of the demigods, right? So he has the most opulence, the most respect, the greatest position, the greatest weapons, greatest tools, greatest power, greatest sort of residence, right? He's on the top of the pyramid of in the material universe, right? There are also obviously there are different personalities above him, like Brahma, like different variety of rishis and brahmanas, but nevertheless, management speaking, Indra is the guy. He's on the top of the pyramid. But in this position, we can see how the reason why Yajna appeared is that he could mitigate the three kleshas in a correct management, in a right way, in a profound fashion. So let's go. So Adidevika, as Indradev, as a supreme personality of Godhead, as an incarnation of the Lord, he can dismantle all the difficulties which are coming from the wrong conception of who you are amongst the demigods, right? Imagine someone of great influence, great piety, great chastity, great knowledge. If he is in a certain area of influence, like the devatas, like the 33 lakhs of the demigods, naturally he will influence them in a correct and a spiritual fashion. But we can say in a karmakandic sort of a way, the demigods are only reacting to the activities of the individual souls. Is that correct? But what if you as the Supreme Lord will rather than give like kind of direct interaction with the souls, you can also introduce like aspects of mercy, aspects of knowledge, aspects of even correct interaction with other personalities, with other jivas. So this is what Indradev in the form of Indradev was actually introducing. He was introducing piety and correct dealing with the other jivas. So that's one mitigation, Adhyatmika. Adibhautika means other living entities. We interact with each other based on how do we understand and see ourselves, right? How our mind is operating. And our mind operates based on the level of the stress which is introduced amongst us. So imagine if someone in the great management, he can provide anything and everything you desire and you need, right? You need right clothing, right foodstuff, right association. Everything is just mitigated. All the problems, all the difficulties connected to the body and mind are mitigated. So what happens then? The Adibhautika, you are not so much stressed. You have everything you desire. The material earth, the Bhumi, provides everything you need. Right? The other living entities are not there to give you troubles and difficulties. Everyone is satisfied. So if there is correct management, the Adibhautika naturally starts disappearing. And Adhyatmika means that the mind and the body is not agitated because they are not influence or elements which create the agitation, right? As we said, other living entities will not put any troubles and difficulties upon you. The demigods are profusely satisfying all your needs and desires. Therefore, why the mind should be distressed? So if there's a correct management, as mentioned in the pastimes of Yajna, then everything is happy, everyone is satisfied. That's why it's said strongly here, twice Prabhupada mentioned in translation, diminish very great miseries in three planetary systems, upper, lower, and intermediate. Another point which we can kind of take from these pastimes is that how Svayambhuva Manu, a great personality who can observe and see the activities and interactions of Yajna, he understood that this is not just an ordinary jiva. Not only it was prophesied or mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that he will appear in a specific time, place, and within specific circumstances, Svayambhuva Manu identified his great position and said, this personality shall be called Hari. This personality is someone who is not an ordinary jiva. So we can understand that appreciation or understanding is a very good or very great trait of a Vaishnava or someone who studies the scriptures. He can understand the individual lakshanas upon other souls or upon the Supreme Lord, and he can identify him without any sort of a mental hesitation. And within this mood, Srila Prabhupada carries his purport. Within this mood, Prabhupada is actually showing and identifying the problem of the age of Kali. Not so much here in kind of a Europe and Western worlds, but in India is very much predominant that every single day there is a new avatar of the Lord popping out, right? This or that part. Everyone is proclaiming, or many personalities are proclaiming, I am God. Once I was on Sankirtan in Watford, and I stopped the person and tried to introduce him to Bhagavad Gita. And you can see at him, sometimes you can read people. When you look at their face features, the way they act, how unsteady they are, how passionate they are. And this person with so much strength, he shouted at me, I am God. I was like, wow, that's very interesting. And I said, can you prove it to me? He said, I don't need to prove anything to you. I said, okay, so bear with me for a moment. If I said to you at this point, I'm policeman, you're arrested, what would you say to me? What would you say? If anyone approaches you and say, you're arrested, I'm a policeman, what would be the first kind of a reaction you would do? Show me your badge. Right? Identify yourself. What are the characteristics, what are the activities that you possess as a policeman or as a god? And then he said also, well, show me your badge, right? Identify yourself. I said, there you go. So you made a proclamation, you proclaimed that you are God, and I asked you, prove it, and you hesitated there. So I assume that you are not God, you're a fool. And then he just said, well, everyone is God. And it's like, do you have to go on a regular basis to evacuate? Do you have to clean yourself? Have you ever had the toothache? Have you ever had distress and difficulties and challenges in your life? He said, yes. So you're not God. God is Atmaram, self-satisfied. You are not self-satisfied. And then he just looked at me and he was just like, he started turning red. And then he just storms off. So maybe I should be more humble next time. But basically the point is, if anyone makes any statements and claims something, we have a full right to ask him about the qualities that he's supposed to possess correctly in connection with that position he's seemingly occupying, right? So this is mentioned a few times by Prabhupada in the fourth canto about who is a brahmana, who is an incarnation. So nothing is cheap. The Vedas have very beautiful quality. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Shri Gornitai ki. One of the very beautiful qualities of the Vedas is that they work on the premises of causalities. They are very causal. If there is an activity, there is causality. If there is something that you do, you can actually find in the Vedas what will be the reaction. And this is absolutely amazing. You can literally adjust your life and you can know the future. It's like there's one shastra, one of the 64 arts which Krishna Balaram learned in the ashram of Sandipani Muni, and it's called Nimitta Gyan. Nimitta Gyan basically means the knowledge about the omens. And it's very interesting how you can actually predict your future just by having knowledge. Just by you having knowledge and understanding how the material world functions, every single step you can predict what will happen if you have correct understanding. So what does this mean for us on a practical scale? It means that as practicing devotees, you can tell by which activities, if you engage in a correct fashion, you can tell what kind of what would you harvest as a reaction, right? So what will happen if you don't read Prabhupada books? What will happen if you don't chant your rounds? What will happen if you're not associated with the devotees? What will happen if you not partake in honoring prasadam? What will happen if you don't do any devotional activities? There will be causality. And I've seen it many times happening again. There's this subtle threat which goes even through devotees' lives. Specifically, it's much more visible in devotees. This is very interesting science. Right? There's a new enthusiastic bhakta coming into the temple. And he's like, the enthusiasm you can just goes through the roof. And then he's just going. And somehow you can see how the enthusiasm starts diminishing. And then they ask a question. Why is it leaving? It was so intoxicating in the beginning. And the simple question may be asked, do you study? Do you read Prabhupada's books? And so, I don't have time, I do service. Well, that's the problem. What happens is that initial enthusiasm, that utsahan, it disappears. It's just, think about like when Krishna puts opens the tap of mercy full on, and you're just bathing in the mercy of Krishna. But then Krishna starts slowly, slowly turning that tap. And there's, in one point, and certain Christian monks, they describe this as dark night of the soul, right? Where is Krishna? Where is God? Did he abandon me? I don't see him in my life anymore. Where is he? Is he here? Why am I constantly running just on my endeavors? There's no reciprocation. There's no mercy. And this is where the problem is. The problem is that you haven't trained yourself to have the vision. You haven't trained yourself to have the chakshush, the shastra chakshush. That's the difference between enthusiasm and true maintenance of a devotee, right? So my point is that the sentimentality of individuals is based on just lacking, right? It's not that we are bad personalities. There's nothing like there's evil, right? Evil doesn't exist. It's just lack of being intelligent or being devotional or having some connection with the Lord. It's just lack. It's ignorance, right? Naturally, because by nature, we are Sachit Ananda. We are full of bliss, full of happiness. It's interesting. I always say this thing to people when I distribute books. And I ask them like, okay, be with me for 1 minute. Just really, really focus now. Let me tell you one thing. Are you sometimes dissatisfied in life? Natural answer is yes. So I say, then you hanker for happiness, which is difficult to find in this, 3D world, right? In this little cube, in this little egg, it's difficult to find true happiness. Is that correct? Is that correct statement if I said that? Usually they say yes. So I said, this is interesting. You are hankering for something which is not within this egg. Think about it for a second. You desire something which is not here. In all of this material creation, you're hankering for something which is not here. So what does it mean? It means one thing. It means two things. It exists, but not here. Does it make sense? It exists, but not here. So what does it mean? Think about the color, right? Imagine you meditate upon the color which is not on the spectrum, right? There's a massive spectrum of colors. And you think about that color, but it's not within the spectrum. So what does it mean? It means exist, but the spectrum cannot offer it. That's interesting. So naturally means, where is that happiness? The intelligent question should be asked, where is that happiness? Where it lies? How can I achieve it? How can I get it? What is the direction towards that happiness? Right? So this is what Srimad Bhagavatam offers. It offers direct connection with that which is not in here, which is not offered by this material world. Therefore, only a madman, and Prabhupada says twice, he says, less intelligent person is only kind of attracted by these unscrupulous like avatars, and but only less intelligent person will perform constantly the same activity and expecting there will be a different result. Right? Prabhupada said it in a very wonderful mantra, chewing of the truth. Right? It's like a sutra. There's a Vedanta sutra, there's different sutras, but Prabhupada has his own sutras. Right? Chewing of the truth, chant and be happy. All these different sutras. Sutra means that when you unpack it, there's unbelievable amount of knowledge within it. So chewing of the chewed is the sutra for the age of Kali, or it's a sutra of jivas, those living entities which are entrapped in this material universe. So kind of to do a quick recap, then we can open it up for Q&A. This yagya was understood and sort of identified by Svayambhuva Manu, who is a great progenitor and great personality, the forefather of all the mankind. The duty of this incarnation named Yagya was to create an environment within the universe by correct management and dispelling the miseries of the material world, namely Adhyatmika, Adhidevika, and Adhibhautika. We establish from Lagu Bhagavatamrita that he's also considered to be Kalpa Avatar or Manvantara Avatar. And what his main duty was to create a good progeny of demigods. He had 12 sons, and all of these 12 sons occupied very different positions amongst the 33 lakhs of demigods. One of the sons, whose name is Yama, which we know as Yamaraj, the superintendent of Yamaloka, or a kind of a lower planetary system responsible for justice, Dharmaraj. And more will be spoken upon this specific pastime in the fourth canto. Then we described and understood that by accepting correct guidance and by occupying position within the management comes a lot of responsibilities, a lot of headaches, but also a lot of boons and benedictions, but also a lot of, many times, negativity. And the reason why the law descends is that dharma samstha panarthaya, and then we can say sambhavam yuge yuge, he appears again and again. And this is another interesting thought. It is said it's scheduled incarnations, right? But then we have one hand, we have said scheduled incarnations. In other hand, we say that these incarnations, they specifically come to mitigate the dharma, the negativity, or reestablish dharma, right? So can we say that there is a certain of a graph going through the different ages when there's a decline of dharma on a regular basis? Right? On a regular basis, there's decline of dharmic activities or devotional activities. So the question may be asked, why there's constant repetition of like up and down, up and down, up and down? Right? The Lord appears, paritranam sadunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavam yuge yuge. Again and again, in a scheduled form, he appears to reestablish dharma. So the question may be asked, why dharma needs to be reestablished? Why dharma needs to be reestablished? Why there's constant decline? Why the Lord appears, reestablishes dharma, leaves, then the devotees are there, maintaining the dharma, dharma is cut, and then Lord comes again. It almost seems the natural propensity of a jiva is to go downwards, is like to decline, is to forget the dharma. And that's how the material universe functions. It's like the Lord appears, creates auspicious environment, creates devotees, gives bhakti, reestablishes bhakti, reestablishes devotees, purifies devotees. Devotees maintain it, but then again, there's a decline because the natural propensity of the jiva is to be, forgetful, right? The senses are incomplete. So the dharma slowly, slowly is cut down unto a point where there's no dharma again. Then the Lord appears again. So it's like an eternal circle. Just like a circle, like boom, again and again and again and again and again, right? Because all those devotees which, for instance, either associated with the Supreme Lord, on the devotees of those devotees, they just disappear, they go back to Godhead. And somehow the dharma declines and declines and declines. So it almost feels that the jiva, the natural propensity of a jiva is to have be constantly in a downfall, right? If doesn't have the one very, the most important aspect, and that is actually two aspects, mercy and association. Mercy and association are the two most important aspects to get out of this material world. But anyway, I kind of went a different direction a bit. But yeah, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any points, any questions, anything devotees would like to share? Yadubar Prabhu, Govinda Prabhu, Prajan Prabhu.
Very nice class, thank you, Prabhu. Very analytical. But Srila Prabhupada was never humble when somebody said he was God. He would say, dog.
Dog.
I think one time, perhaps, somebody said he was God, and Prabhupada said, please accept my humble obeisances. So, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the point, Prabhu. Any other points? Sankirtan Priya, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. So, in the purport, you mentioned that the upper, lower, and intermediate planets are satisfied. So, just some wanted to understand a little bit more around how did the Lord Yajna diminish the miseries of those in the lower planetary systems?
You see, in this material world, there's one mantra, one sutra, which I like to meditate upon. And it goes like this, from subtle to gross. So everything in this material universe is basically result of subtle to gross. Whatever you are from, whoever you are, whatever type of body you have, whatever type of consciousness, activities, arm, legs, head, body, whatever it may be, it's always result of your desires and your consciousness, and ultimately the activities that you perform. And on the great magnitude, on a great scale, lower, intermediate, and upper, is just a gross, great facilitation of consciousness. So, if correct management is introduced, if a correct consciousness is introduced, even to lower planetary systems, the lower planetary systems can become higher planetary systems, and the higher planetary systems can become lower planetary systems. It's just a consciousness. It's a stage of consciousness that you're creating certain ethos and environment. Like, okay, this it used to be, how do you call it? Piggott Mansion, right? Piggott's Mansion or whatever. Yeah, I can't. So I bet there were so many hedonistic activities happening where in this room, in this place. Sorry?
It was a dance hall.
Yeah, this was a dance hall. So what do you do when you dance? You also intoxicate, right? So this was a place of great intoxication. This was a place where hedonism was sprouting like anything. I bet there was much more other activities happening here, which we're not going to say. We're not going to speak about that, right? So the consciousness, the ethos, I don't know, 100 years ago, in this very own room, was hellish. But what is it now? This is Vaikuntha. This is heavenly, no, this is beyond heavenly regions. This is a spiritual abode. Why? Because the ethos changed, because the consciousness changed, because the management changed, because Radha Gokulananda is here. So, hellish planet can become heavenly region, and heavenly region can become hellish planet, right? For a devotee, even the most celestial, you know, environments can become hellish if there's no Supreme Personality of God, if there's no Krishna Katha, that's hellish, right? So that will be my answer. Any other points by devotees? Pavel Prabhu?
I just would like to confirm one thing. What are the chances, in your opinion, of jiva against material influence of material nature? Is there a chance or there is no chance of overcoming the three modes of material nature alone?
Without devotees, that's the way it goes. You can't do it. You can't. That's just the way the material nature functions. You just can't get away with it. Why? Because to go back to Godhead, the aspect of mercy is important. And who are those which deliver mercy? Vaishnavas. So without the mercy of a devotee, it's just not possible. He's like, how it could be possible? How can three modes of material nature facilitate something which is out of their scope? Like naturally, it's three guna. As he said, right, Prabhupada many times explains, guna means a rope. So when you are completely entrapped in these circulation within the three modes of material nature, and the respective material body is connected to the three modes of material nature, there's no scope of getting out without the mercy of other devotees and the Supreme Lord, obviously. So, no. No, not possible.
Thank you.
Srinivas Prabhu?
You know, you're talking about three modes of nature. In a surrender to me, Bhujan Prabhu was commenting how the sacrifices are there to go to heaven or go to back to Godhead like that. This is showing the minor independence of the jiva. The three modes of nature will never do something like that.
Mm.
So it just shows you your point, how the minor independence of the jiva is given in this section.
Yeah. The three modes are just tools. They're just tools. Yeah. Three individual tools, by mixing them you get a result. That's it, but just tools. Just tools so the jiva can play. Jiva has the desires and the tools, they act. Yadubar Prabhu?
Your whole class emphasized the importance of good leadership. And we see in ISKCON today that when things are expanding and flourishing, there's strong leadership. And that means someone who is a really Christian, very intelligent and good management. I think Prabhupada said that. How will things go on? I think Giriraj Swami asked him that. Prabhupada said, good management and intelligence. So, and a Krishna conscious leader is very important.
Very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So with that said, yes? Adi Guru Prabhu?
I just read, you said something, and I'm just going to read the verse, which is what you said. It's from the fifth canto. An intelligent person does not take interest in a place, even in the topmost planetary system. If the pure Ganges of topics concerning the Supreme Lord's activities does not flow there, if there are not devotees engaged in service on the banks of such a river of piety, or if there are no festivals of Sankirtan Yagya to satisfy the Lord.
Very beautiful. Thank you so much, Prabhu, bringing a Shastrical vision. Thank you so much. If Vaishnavas have any last points, Sankirtan Priya Prabhu, and then we're going to stop. Last question, last point.
Just on your little detour towards the end of your class, you mentioned about the propensities of the jivas going down and down and down. So we are here in the golden age of Mahaprabhu. So would you say that we are at the top of the golden age right now, having the best of the time? So will the degradation kick in towards the end?
Wow. That's what he said, right? After 10,000 years, someone mentioned in a couple of days recently that, so someone asked Prabhupada, what would happen after this golden age? And Prabhupada said, like, I will eat you and you will eat me. Something like that? Was it like that, Yadubar Prabhu?
Yeah.
Something like that. So it will be all about just destruction and...
So then are we saying that this is the pinnacle of the golden age?
Yeah, we're going for it. We're going for it. The children of the third generation, they will be the ones who will usher the golden age in the greatest fashion, in the most strongest fashion, based on their purity and actual very strong, deep connection with Krishna. Yes, Prabhu?
On that note, on what Sankirtan Prabhu mentioned, so... within this golden age, it's mentioned that, this is from a room conversation, that it's 10,000 years. For the next 5,000 years, it's going to actually increase. The opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness will increase in the world. Of course, it's up to us, the humans, whether we take to it. Then it will reach its pinnacle on, around the 5,000 years. Then from 5,000 years onwards,
some maintenance,
gradually decrease, but it'll still be there. Then once 10,000 year mark you know, finishes, then it will, like, you know, become
full on
more underground, basically. So we're at the beginning of the golden age. So it will get, you know, the opportunity will get more.
So much room for Sankirtan. We're going to finish it here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Nitya Gaura Premanande.